Hello, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending where you are in the world, and welcome to The Templar Show. I'm your host for tonight, Nick Griffin. Normally here on Tuesday nights, but owing to travel problems, I wasn't available. Jim covered for me, so I'm returning the favour tonight, because Brother Dowson is very, very busy indeed. So you're all very welcome, and I'd love to see who's in the room with me, but I cannot see, because the techie brother was away travelling on working things the last 2 days. Got back hideously late last night, also due to various traffic problems, and set up the show earlier and then went to bed for a well-deserved couple of hours rest. But sadly, for reasons unbeknownst to me, I do not have on my prompt screen here any images at all of the chat room. So I don't know who's here. I may be all alone, but frankly, I doubt it. So whoever you are, I'm sure all the regulars will be there. You know who you are. You're all very welcome here with me at the moment. Further, I can't even move my prompts because we're completely stuck here, but I'll crack on with things anyway. First of all, we made some really good progress here in the St. Donard's Priory headquarters over the last few days. The workload here is immense. What's going on is fantastic. And I've got a picture for you showing the chapter house, which for the last... This is the lower chapter house. For the last, I think, probably 6-9 months, has been full of builder's tools. Now that the hub has been completed and many things have been moved down there, there's now room in the main priory house for the builder's tools in one of the rooms that's about to be wrecked for the next and really the big wave of this fantastic project. So the lower chapter house is now ready to go. It's actually right now, we were filling it this afternoon with desks, shelving and all the rest of it, starting to get it into full use. But here's a picture I took for you just before that. There. Now, isn't that looking absolutely grand? That's brand new. Wouldn't think it, would you? It's really part of the tradition. It's a lovely room. This is going to be used as the main office hub. So there'll be a desk, work desk, workstation in each corner. There'll be one of the main stuffing machines running down the middle, various racking and all the rest of it for things that are needed there and then, archives and such like for office work. Really is. It's a tremendous room. See those two big skylights up above? So there's loads of natural light in there. It really is something that's going to be a tremendous asset to the order and to our various friends that we work with. And all I can do again is to thank you, all of you, who helped make that happen, because it could not have been done without you. And it's absolutely tremendous. And Jim was down there earlier on today. He is so happy. He really is. Because he did say, well, I wasn't absolutely sure that I'd be here to see it finished like that. Well, he is, and hopefully he'll be here for quite a lot longer yet. So, moving on, what have we got? Well, I suppose it's worth mentioning the Annecy terrorist attack, which took place earlier on today when a Syrian refugee ran berserk in the French Alps resort, lakeside resort town of Annecy, and stabbed at least 3 children, 3 of them in very serious condition in hospital, probably 4 children at least, and 1 adult. An absolutely appalling, brutal attack. Now, the media are now saying this man has just declared that he was a Christian, said, I'm doing this in Christ's name. Well, if he is, he's completely mad, because obviously that is nothing whatsoever to do with Jesus Christ or the New Testament. I mean, it's literally insane. Unless, of course, he's not insane at all, but he's an Islamist, as most Syrian refugees are. And he's doing this as part of his personal, I know how to really get the Christians, yeah, not kill a few of them, but try and disgrace their entire religion. So it could be that. Who knows? What we do know is that President Macron, just like Biden in America, just like Sunak and before him Johnson and Cameron and the rest of them in Britain, they've all been insistent that hundreds of thousands of Syrian refugees have to be allowed into our country. And what is a Syrian refugee? It's someone fleeing from the Syrian government, which is a secular government, a moderate government, which has room in Syria for all its peoples. The only people, in fact, who protect the Christians of Syria and the Shia minority and the other minorities, the Druze and so on, and the Alawites, and for that matter, moderate Sunni Muslims. Almost all of the millions of refugees who left Syria and haven't gone back are Sunnis, and many Sunnis fighting in the Syrian army. But these are Sunnis from the extremist areas where the Islamist hardliners have for years had an absolute stranglehold on people. And the reason they become refugees is because they don't want to live. Pardon me. They don't want to live in a secular state. Certainly don't want to live in a Christian state, which theoretically France is. So whatever this man is, the simple fact is that he wouldn't even be in France if it wasn't for the French political elite, who, like all our political elites, have insisted that diversity is going to be wonderful. It's pure enrichment. And then every few weeks, you get something like this happens, which suggests it's not really that enriching or wonderful after all. No doubt we'll know more about it. If he's one of the Islamist terrorists operating under a sort of disguise, as it were, then it's simply blowback. Because the West, the entire West, including in particular the government of France, alongside the governments of the United States and Britain, put enormous amounts of work and billions of pounds worth of our taxes' money into radicalising and weaponising extremist Muslims from all over the world, in fact, to declare war and to go to war with the secular nationalist Syrian government. So every single refugee who's left Syria as a result, whatever their faith, whether they're good people, medium people, or very, very bad people indeed, none of them would have left Syria if it wasn't for the Western powers which tried to destroy Syria using extremist Muslims. The worst example of all being President Obama, whose Operation Timber Sycamore is the largest gun-running operation in the whole of human history, with billions of dollars worth of arms and ammunition being poured into the hands of so-called moderate rebels, who are actually head-cutting, throat-cutting extremists. So whatever happened in NSC, in the end, it's the responsibility not just of the evil human thing that carried out the attack, but the utterly evil, inhuman politicians of the West who created the conditions in which it could do so. It's truly a very, very sad thing. Right, moving on, shall we, to something a bit closer to home for those of you who are with me from Britain. I'll show you in a moment it's a good, heartening piece of footage. We have had for months now, first of all, it was Extinction Rebellion, and now it's Just Stop Oil, which is basically a Soros-funded agitprop group, which is designed to give the impression that the public want radical environmental change. They want to clamp down on cars. They want higher taxes on fuel and all the rest of it because they're desperate about saving the planet from non-existing global warming. And this is to provide the excuse for the political elite to do what they want to do anyway, what they're going to do anyway, which is to slash our carbon footprint. Not their carbon footprint, no, of course not. Your carbon footprint. And Just Stop Oil are one of these groups of Soros-funded useful idiots who are part of the propaganda war to try to make this happen. And they've been blocking streets, particularly in London, blocking motorways and so on, making a thoroughgoing nuisance of themselves. People have literally died in ambulances waiting to get past blockages caused by these crackpots. And the public are getting really sick of them. Every time a member of the public tries to have a go, the police, who've been standing idly by while these criminal cranks stop ordinary people going about their lawful business, including getting to hospitals, the police stand idly by and let them do that. The minute the public step in, or the police straight in grab them, and as is always the case, it's the lawful citizen who's either trying to do something against something that's wrong, or is provoked beyond endurance by something that's wrong, it's the lawful citizen that the police go for. But I'm happy to say that in this case, either the police stood by or they weren't there. And just watch what happens when crusty middle-class protesters are actually come up against proper, ordinary, decent working people.
be here. But I have literally spent the past 10 years of my life fighting against the climate crisis. Do you think I like being shouted at? Do you think I like this humiliation? We've tried everything and nothing is working. Thousands of people die and we can do something about it and we're not. And I know it's not these people's fault, but this is literally the only way to get the government to care. I'm so sick of the lies and I'm so sick of nothing being done.
Because they don't have a future. I don't want to be here. I want to be here with my children as well. But right now, their future is starvation and war and death. And I'm here because I need to be able to tell them that I did everything I could when I still could. Please join us if you support us.
That was excellent, that bit, wasn't it? Especially at the start and the end. I left that on, that crank there, spouting about old children are going to starve. They're going to starve thanks to the World Economic Forum and their criminal government puppets who are deliberately destroying the food production capability of the entire planet as quickly as they can. If these environmentalists were really worried about ordinary kids all over the world starving, they'd be taking action on our side. But of course, they're not. They're bought and paid for, and they are deeply, deeply stupid. Not just, of course, them. There's also the whole of the woke fraternity and those responsible for what are called, especially in America, the culture wars. And the moderate conservatives and so on call it a culture war. It's not really a culture war. It's a war on God and it's a war on humanity. The culture, our cultures, are just part of, they're a subset, a side effect of God and humanity. So they're not really at war with a bit of culture, with dead white males. They're at war with all of us, and they're at war with God. But as we said a number of times on these shows, well, probably a year plus now, there's this increasing tension between the LGBT part of the woke fraternity, sorry, the LGB part of the woke fraternity, and the T's, formerly with LGBT, and now really increasingly not, as the revolution devours its own children. And there was a very interesting event in Oxford the other day where one Kathleen Stock, who's described as a TERF, a trans-exclusionary radical feminist, i.e. a feminist, probably a lesbian, I don't know, but certainly a feminist who doesn't like the idea of men dressing up as women and claiming to be women and thereby, for instance, ensuring that from now on, all women's sporting events are won by men. So she's one of the feminists who's taking issue with the woke extremism that's really gone simply too far, even for them. And she did a speech in the Oxford University the other day. It was quite funny that actually you have to agree with most of what she was saying. But the wokists went berserk and there was a near riot outside and she was threatened and all the rest of it. And all sorts of conservative spokesmen have come out of the woodwork to defend her free speech. And I was looking at one, we were unable to get the clip because the techie brother was so busy, unfortunately, but one by a chap called Peter Whittle, who I actually covered in the book about what's behind the English Defence League. About the rise of fake patriotism and fake nationalism on behalf of the Zionists and the powers that be. And Peter Whittle's a little footnote in there. He's a right-wing commentator on obscure British blog stations and so on. And he had a discussion with a couple of most slug-like non-English, but English-speaking individuals. I'd love to show it to you, actually, say I can't. And on there they were saying, well, Kathleen Stock, of course, she's absolutely entitled to her free speech, but they were horrified then that the far left and the trans people likened her to me. They said, oh, they're likening this really wonderful, good, kind woman to Nick Griffin. Because when Nick Griffin spoke at the Oxford Union some years ago, there was an even bigger riot. That was rather good. But I was interested to see Peter Whittle because he's one of these homosexual intellectuals who's virulently against Islam. Not because Islam is or the Islamification of the West is a threat to our ethnic identity. It's a threat to our Christian values and our faith. No, not because of that, but because hardline Islam is against homosexuals. Likewise, all these intellectual right-wing poofs, they're all virulently anti-Russian. They're all crowing for the Ukrainian Nazis, despite the fact the Ukrainian Nazis, if they got to power in the West, as they fantasise they're going to at the end of this war, the first group they'd shoot after all the Jews would be all the homosexuals. But nevertheless, Peter Whittle, Douglas Murray, all these intellectuals in Britain and many in the United States as well, these conservative right-wing buffs, yeah, they're all hysterically against Russia because, of course, Putin, people who are homosexual are allowed in Russia. They're allowed, they even have homosexual clubs. But if they, one for one moment, start to promote homosexuality to young children, bang, the quite tough hand of the Russian state comes down and stops them. And quite rightly so. The Russians do not want their children perverted in front of their very eyes. And it was interesting to see that this group, these conservative homosexuals, they've just started now. They've moved on. They're taking a break from attacking Islam for the wrong reasons. They've taken a break from standing up for Ukraine and opposing Vladimir Putin. And they're now, on all their chat shows the last week, they're saying we need to move on from Philip Schofield, who, if you're perhaps in the USA, you don't know, he's a British chat show host who came out as gay a little while ago. And it's now come out why he came out, because he was about to be exposed for a pederastic affair with a very young boy who he'd got a job. And these people, they're all saying, oh, move on from Philip Schofield. You know, he's been punished. He's lost his job. He's had a terrible time. And we're all bored of it. We now need to move on and talk about other things, such as the culture wars and poor Kathleen Stock and so on. Forget about Philip. Why? Because Philip Schofield was a pederast. He's been exposed as a pederast. And all of them are rushing to try and move the public on, get their attention away, focused on something else. Because if the public and the investigators, the dirt diggers, keep on looking at Philip Schofield and what he did and the circumstances and so on for much longer, there's a serious risk that people will start to put two and two together and understand that pederasty and homosexuality are like that. Because pederasty, the seduction and perversion of young boys, is how these people reproduce. They don't have their own kids. They reproduce. The thing reproduces itself through pederasty. So what Philip Schofield was doing with that young lad was nothing unusual. That's the point. This is standard, normal homosexual practice. And it's why when moderate nationalists and moderate Christians say, oh, well, as long as they love each other and don't touch our kids, and are doing it behind closed doors and so on, then there's nothing wrong. It's missing the point. Because the problem with homosexuality is not what adult homosexuals do with each other. It's what they do, and almost all of them do it or want to do it, with young children, because that's how they reproduce. That's the real problem, and it's why this thing has to be repressed. Right, shall we move on? Yes, United States, because I've missed out. We've got lots, huge numbers of really valued, much loved brethren in the United States. Some of you are coming over here to join us in Ireland and in the chapter house here very, very shortly, which is why we're working like blueback flies to get it done in time for you. You're really, really welcomed. And so let's have something for the United States. Let's have a look at, what was that one? Hang on. Two labels here wrong. Here we go.
We highlight the story of Rylan Whittington, whose journey of transitioning at age 5 has been seen by 7 million people in a family YouTube video. Brian Yenis has a story about that family that hopes their experience can help others. Watch here.
If you saw me walking down the street, you wouldn't think anything different.
14-year-old Rylan Whittington is a typical Southern California teenager. And the Whittingtons, along with mom Hillary, dad Jeff, and sister Brinley, are a typical family. The only difference, though, in Ryland's eyes, is what this family can mean to the tens of thousands of kids under 18 who identify as transgender.
We put our story out there so people could see that, like, there's another family out there that is going through what we're going through, or there's another family who's proud of who they are.
Before Ryland could even speak, he managed to tell his parents that he is a boy.
That is the sight and sound of Fox News committing suicide. This is the, as all our American friends know, and many Brits and others as well, Fox has been, was just about the last or the only relatively right-wing stronghold in the United States legacy media. And while it still had Tucker Carlson, it was providing a platform for a really important spokesman, not entirely like us, but towards our wavelength. And 90%, that's 93% of what Tucker Carlson said was always absolutely spot on, perfect, and desperately needed saying. And of course, Fox got rid of him. And it seemed like a stupid thing to do. And since then, their viewings ratings have absolutely plummeted. But then on top of that, they come out for Pride Month when their audience is overwhelmingly Christian American, white, middle America. And they do that. And just watch the start of that once again. This is Fox News.
We highlight the story of Ryland Whittington, whose journey of transitioning at age 5 has been seen.
There you go. America together, Pride Month. Fox, primetime, suicide. Absolutely unbelievable. And for us, I'm talking here about the order, a very, very good thing. And for Elon Musk, a very, very good thing. Because the ending of Fox News as a media platform which every patriot, Christian, decent middle American could watch and feel, at least there's someone there saying it like it is, saying it like I feel, saying it like I know it is. Now there's nobody there. Where can they go? They can go to Gab, but sadly, although Andrew Tauber's a great fellow doing a good work, it's a very small operation still. There's only one place they can go, which is a big hitter. And that, of course, is Twitter. And it was very noticeable that Tucker Carlson's first broadcast on Twitter had, was it 40 million views within just a few hours? And these are staggering amounts. The What Is a Woman documentary, with just hundreds of millions of views on Twitter. This is now competing with the legacy media in a way that Facebook was 8 or 9 years ago. Only this time, Twitter, this real competition for the legacy media, is owned by someone who by no means is all like us, who's got very, very strange views on some of his ideas about where humanity needs to go and who should be taking us there. But he's committed to the concept in America that if you're going to have a democracy, you have to have a free media, and there has to be at least one platform where there's free speech. And realistically, because all the left have gone, he's not saying free speech for the freaks, for the perverts, for the atheists. They've already got that on CNN, CBS, BBC, etc. This is about free speech for the large majority of patriots and Christians. And yes, clearly, I think because he's under serious attack and threat, there's various people who are way, way to the fringes who got knocked off Twitter or haven't been allowed back on Twitter. And you can say, well, it's a bad thing, but there again, it would damage Twitter. Why should you have some neo-Nazi crank spouting nonsense and poison that offends ordinary people when it just damages Twitter? Why should Elon Musk allow that? So he's quite entitled to get rid of that, and it's probably a sensible thing for him to do. But for most people, including at present us, Twitter is now somewhere where you're free to speak and to get on. It's not perfect yet. For instance, I'm on Twitter, and if you look for me on Twitter, if you're not already a follower of mine, you don't see my name, you don't see my picture. All you get is this account is so sensitive you really shouldn't see it. So I'm still under an enormous shadow ban, but many, many people aren't. And we present don't seem to be, fingers crossed. Please God, it doesn't happen. But while we're there, it's a very, very good and important and because of the suicide of Fox, rapidly increasingly important place for us to reach ordinary people all over the English-speaking world in particular, with our really important and unique message. So if you're not on Twitter and you can get on, please get on. If you're already there, and I know I'm on there a lot on our page, and I'm seeing comments and things from various people who are in the chat room with us now, who, a reminder, I can't see tonight. That's what I'm not picking up on some of what you're saying, not commenting on who's here and what you've got to say to us, because I can't see you. Normal service should resume as soon as possible. But anyway, I see a number of you there on Twitter, particularly interacting with us, and it's really important. And you might think, well, how does it really help if I put one or two comments on the Templar's Twitter feed every day? You know, what difference does it make? It makes a lot of difference because it affects the algorithms. The artificial intelligence of the machine within the Twitter thing, whatever it is, that works out, well, which subjects are interesting people, which subjects are trending, which sites are interesting, which sites help to draw more people into Twitter and keep them there. And one of the things the algorithm looks at is the number of interactions that your site has with its viewers. So every time you press the heart button, every time you like it, and particularly every time you interact with us and leave a little comment, that is almost as important as every time you actually share it yourself. All these things together make a big difference. What you as an individual do, I'll be honest, you know, makes very little difference. But when there's 20, 30, 60, 100, 200, 500 individuals all doing that little bit on a regular basis, not just a night because I've reminded you, but just every single day, write it down somewhere, a post-it note or whatever it needs to be, until it becomes a habit, and make that habit of helping grow the Templar Twitter feed every single day, please, by simply commenting, liking and sharing. Right, let's go back for a minute actually to the Annecy thing, because I've got here now a bit of a video clip. There's a really truly horrific video clip going out of this monster, Muslim, Christian, whatever he is, an appalling creature, actually attacking these poor kids, their mothers screaming and so on. And we decided not to show that because it's just not the sort of thing which it's necessary to see. Imagining it is bad enough. You don't need to see these things. No. But what I have got instead is a little clip of the aftermath of the attack, where you'll see one man running being chased. If you look carefully, the man running, he's carrying a knife. All the man chasing him has got is a rucksack, which is actually quite a reasonable weapon to use, a shield to use against someone with a knife. And this disgusting little coward is running away from one stroke two unarmed men. But have a think as you look at this of the bravery of these quite young Frenchmen who are running after this monster who's just been stabbing children and women because they're hell-bent on stopping him and defending innocent youngsters. It really is something quite, it's only short, but I think it's very good to see. So, short, but actually genuinely sweet. And a couple of the local men did indeed grab him, got him to the ground, stopped him hurting anyone else and held him until the police arrived. Many parts of the world, they'd simply have lynched him. But our people don't do that. Just innately, thoroughly decent, law-abiding people, but still, sometimes, as you've just seen there, prepared to have a go and put themselves at enormous risk in order to defend women and children. That is what we do. It's also a reminder that, by the way, as we told you time and time again, that the time of the Templars is coming. Because that sort of thing, these attacks by these refugees, almost always young men of military age coming into all our countries, or the attacks by the ethnic minorities who are close to becoming majorities and who are brought up with enormous chips on their shoulders and hatred against us. Those people, as their numbers grow, as our population gets older and shrinks, they'll become bolder and more dangerous. The radical trans freaks, don't think they're going to stop where they are. You think to where the trans thing was 3 years ago, when it was basically unheard of. to where it was 1 year ago when they're demanding equal rights and so on, to where it is now when they're literally attacking feminists, lesbians, who deny their right to say, I'm a woman. They are getting in the United States, I think we've shown some little clips here a couple of weeks ago, that in the United States, these trans freaks are openly arming themselves and saying that they're preparing for a trans day of vengeance. These people are clinically insane and they're winding themselves up to go mad. This is a revolution. It's a Marxist, communist, atheist revolution. And all of these revolutions end in appalling bloodshed when these monsters finally get full control and are able to let all their deep, disgusting urges out at the expense of ordinary people. And it's coming as well, which means that the time of the Templars is coming as well. The time when decent, Christian, white, I've said it, and also good Muslims, good Jews, I think there's a few, but I know there's a few. Some of the most critical and intelligent critiques of Zionism and the Jewish religious hatred of Christ and Christianity come from genuinely righteous Jews. Don't ever forget that. So there are good people of all races, good black people. We've shown them on the shows a number of times when black men, black women are speaking out against the general trend in their community, which makes them far braver than people in our community who say the same things. And they're speaking out for the same things for which we speak out. So one day there's going to be an alliance of decent, faithful, traditionalist religious peoples of all faiths and all races against the monstrosities of the modern world and the things that are coming down, barreling down the track towards us in this appalling transhumanist 21st century future the elite have got planned for us. Yep, we're all going to stand together. But the Christians at present, the Jews tend to be very, very united by their faith and their Judaism and their instinctive ethnocentricity. The Muslims, they're united, millions of them, by this fierce, fierce passion for their faith, for their book and for their prophet. And what are the Christians? All over the place. And we need the muscular Christianity, the ethos of the Templars, to spread very, very rapidly amongst our people. But you can't expect it to spread amongst them out there unless, first of all, it spreads into you. Unless you become the individual who in some way has taken some step today, tomorrow, the day after, some little step to become a better person, to have to find some form of unity with decent people in your area. Because when push comes to shove and there's some crazed knifeman or gunman, if you're on your own, you're in trouble. If there's a group of you, they're in trouble. So it was a very interesting lesson learnt there. Right, time is cracking on. What have I got to show you now? Yeah, I want to show you this headline from The Guardian a couple of days ago. There we go. So universal basic income of £1,600, that's the best part of $2,000, a month is to be trialled in two places in Britain. So what is this about? Well, universal basic income is something being promoted by the radical elites who have more or less seized control of our societies. The World Economic Forum is big into the idea and they're promoting it. Basically, it's the idea that people should be paid money by the state, which produces it out of thin air or out of taxes, and then pays people to do nothing. What? Why? Where on earth has this come from? Well, yes, it's got a very strong communist element. You know, you need money, we'll give it to you. But it actually goes back further than that. It started off as a concept called social credit. Now, don't confuse that with the social credit score, without which you will not get your universal basic income. Now, this predates that by a long way. Social credit was an economic and financial theory dreamt up by a man named Major C.H. Douglas, who was a Brit, who was involved in the First World War. And during the First World War, he was on the beach at Gallipoli, and under this blazing sun with Turkish shot and shells and machine gun bullets raining down on the Brits and the Australians who were there, He once saw a man turn down a golden guinea for the last bit of water in his water bottle by a desperate soldier who was obviously so thirsty and thinking, I'm going to die anyway. What use is this golden guinea to me? I'd rather have the water. And that made C.H. Douglas think, to spark this thing off, about the value of money. And he became really one of the first men to fully understand the fundamental fraud that is the current fiat money banking system, whereby private banks and private banks masquerading as public banks, like the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England, create money out of thin air, put it on a ledger, nowadays computerised, and then lend it into circulation at usury. And he was one of the first men to criticise that. And he called the idea that how to deal with this. Well, the money that society needs, the economy needs to grow, should be put into circulation by the government. But he said, I don't think it should be the government spending it on capital projects like new railway lines that are needed or new harbours or new nuclear power stations, because government's already got enough power. I think it should be given automatically to every adult as their dividend, as their share of the potential future immediate growth of the economy, and then they can spend it in circulation however they want. And actually, to be fair, it would be a far better way than we have it now, whereby the banks do it. And his criticism of huge government power was also very valid. But C.H. Douglas missed a point here, that if spending the money themselves gives the government a great deal of power, if they're going to spend it on a railway line or a nuclear power station, spending it gives them power, but also having it in their hands, with they are the ones who decide who to give it to. That's also a serious problem. C.H. Douglas just had this rose-tinted spectacles view of government, that they'd simply say, right, everyone this month's going to get 700 quid, and they'd had it handed out to everybody, which of course we know is not the case. And now we come back to the modern social credit system, the Chinese style, which the World Economic Forum and their puppets in all our governments, the Bidens, the Sunaks, the Macrons, and all the rest of it, want, and especially the Trudeaus, want to roll out, is that you only get your money if your social credit score is good, and your social credit score is influenced by things such as, well, in China, that your kids don't keep the neighbours awake at night, don't try and set up a pride parade. But in the West, your social credit score is going to be determined by all the things that the far left want. So if you go on holiday abroad and you fly, you'll lose some of your social credit. If you have an old car that still uses petrol, you'll lose some of your social credit. If you speak out against vaccination, you'll lose a huge wadge of your social credit. And if you're some kind of racist, you won't have any kind of social credit at all. And they decide what racism is. And it's never a coloured person having a go at a white. Oh, no, 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 no. It's one rule for them, one rule for us. It's called anarcho-tyranny. That's the fundamental phrase, the definition of a society in which there's one rule for some and one rule or no rule for the others. And that, of course, is what our elites would do. And it's what makes the universal basic income now such a dangerous thing. There needs to be a debate. If taking the whole of artificial intelligence and robotization to its logical conclusion, if all the work for 90% of the people just vanishes, either the 90% of the people have to vanish, or they have to be given money for doing nothing, or society has to find other things to do for them to do, useful things, and find a way to create the wealth that allows the 90% who now don't have jobs to buy the produce of the machines who do the things that human beings used to do. There is a serious debate to be had there. It's far too much to do in one show. There is a serious debate. And the old capitalist system, whereby there's lots of hands, lots of workers, and they get bits of the money, thereby they can buy the products of the system, it's not going to work anymore. So something does have to be done, but not a communist system run by a global self-determined elite who are determined to remake the whole of the world, including us, including humanity, according to rules that they set up by themselves, specifically without God, in rebellion against God. It is literally it's people call it satanic. It is. The better phrase actually is Luciferian. This is precisely what Lucifer did. Yes, it's the devil, yes. But in the sort of slight guise of Lucifer, the bringer of light, so the bringer of technology to mankind, and this archangel who had such pride that he refused to obey God. There's no surprise when you think about it that the whole LGBT thing, the flag of the stolen rainbow, the rainbow which was put after the Great Flood as a sign of God's covenant with humanity, they've stolen the rainbow and they call themselves pride. It's one of the seven deadly sins, and it's the sin that caused the fall of Lucifer, that turned an archangel into the devil. There's no coincidence about these things. We are facing a monstrous, it's not just a man-made tyranny, it's a tyranny of such a depth of rebellion against God and nature and normality that it is thoroughly evil. It's Luciferian, it is satanic. And there's very, very few people will tell you that, which is why this show is important, why we need you to share it. It's why this order is important. We're ahead of the game constantly. In 2-3 years' time, everyone else will be saying what I've just told you. Just as now, everybody else is now telling you what we put in this book nearly 3 years ago. Everyone is now out there talking about the demographic crisis that's going to obliterate the economies and societies of the world. We were talking about this in this book. It's years ago. We're ahead of the game. That's one of the reasons why this order is so important and why your support for it is so important and so greatly valued. So thank you all very much and thank you for joining me. Right, I'm going to leave it at that now. Other than to say, of course, that Brother Dowson, God willing, will be with you tomorrow night, which is a Friday night. And I've got to introduce the end slate to you. So I've got to think what it is, because I haven't got my notes here, because it ain't working. Yes, today, the 8th of June, is the anniversary of the worst casualties in the British Army since the Second World War at Bluff Cove in the Falklands, when the Argentinian Air Force came out of what had been a very cloudy, misty sky and severely damaged several British ships, including the Sir Galahad, the Sir Tristram, and a landing craft, with the Welsh Guards particularly taking terrible casualties, 56 men killed and 150 injured. A truly terrible day for the British Army. And I looked for a song which could commemorate that, and there's actually only one song, which is a bit jokey and funny. It's a squaddy sort of song. It's not really sombre enough. It doesn't really do the job. It's about the Falklands War as a whole. So I looked instead and I found another film, music video I wanted to show you. I might have shown it to you about 9 months ago. I'm not sure. I certainly thought of it. This is a lovely song written as the soundtrack for a film which in Britain was released as Kajaki, The True Story, and in the United States as Kilo 2 Bravo. Not Bravo 2, Kilo 2 Bravo. The same film. And it really is a wonderful war film. It's not comfortable watching. It's really grim. It's about a British patrol in Afghanistan that stray into a Soviet-era minefield. And their day gets worse from there. And I do really recommend that you watch Kilo 2 Bravo, a.k.a. Kajaki. And the film that goes with this wonderful moving soundtrack. Do listen very carefully to the words. The film that goes with it has extracts from the film, the movie itself, Kajaki. Really is worth watching. Hope you enjoy this very moving song and the images that go with it. I'll be back with you, God willing, next Tuesday. Until then, have a safe night and in due course, a blessed weekend. And please do remember, as always, that freedom, your freedom, is never free, because the tree of liberty must be watered from time to time with the blood of martyrs and of tyrants. Deus vult.
Here's a new place Here are new faces, and yet you are all that I see. There is your t-shirt, there is your jacket, and that's how your hair used to be. Come with me through the sand and the snow. Run with me as the rain starts to flow. I'll dream of you every night, and I'll love you for all of my life. You will be close as we all make a toast to the good times, the new and the old. Sharing the night, we all laugh till we cried at the stories and jokes that you told. Stand with us as we all reunite. Dance with us till the sky becomes light. We'll think of you every night, and we'll love you for all of our lives. Fine at the end as I watched you walk out and leave. But I hear your voice as you made your choice and said, this is the life for me. I'll love you for all of my life.